All good.
The San Jose Sharks made 5 trades today, including trading Tomas Hertl to the Vegas Golden Knights. After some time to reflect, we're going to break it all down. It's tilt into glasses. It's go time. Playing. I don't know what happened. It's fine. Oh, that's what happened. But if you want to be part of the show, you can talk to us in the chat. We got a bunch in the chat waiting for the show to start. And sorry for a little bit of a late start. We will get things rolling here quickly. You can hit us up on all the social media platforms. Look for us on tealtownusa.com. You guys know what to do. Hit the like, hit the subscribe, leave comments down below. Let's get this thing going.
You may not like the trades today, but please like our show.
Yeah. Don't take out the trades today on our show. Tonight it is myself. I am at Ian Blogs Hockey on the Third Machine, also known as Ian Reed. I have Mr. Kevin Lacey with me, and I also have Mr. Marky Mark. How you doing, Mark? It's been a while.
I'm doing good. Yeah, I feel like me and you only chat on like draft day or days like this where big things happen. So I feel like our emotions are always kind of running a bit high.
Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
No, I'm not on mute. I'm just, that's my reaction. You know, I was here last year with you guys on Teal Town Live telling you why the Timo Meier trade wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
I can't defend this one. And all right. So I'm going to, I don't know. This is going to be, I think, a lot of just blah today. So Sharks fans, we're right there with you. We'll chat about it. It'll be a good conversation. It'll be therapy here. I don't know where you want to start, guys. I mean, like
we're going to work our way up to the
process of switching over from NHL Network's coverage to getting that TSN feed when all of a sudden the Hertl trade went down. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to get the TSN feed up immediately because this can't be real. So I found it on TV right away. So I figured everything on Twitter was true.
So me and Kevin were like, Kevin, I had tweeted out because I was like about to leave for work. Right. And it's like, nothing, you know, it's like, whatever. I thought at this point, like, a lot of things happened after I went to work. Like, so I tweeted out like, well, this has kind of been a whatever, you know, trade deadline. It's, you know, it's meh. And Kevin's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And
then
like a second later, that is when it happens, right? That's when the Tomas Hertl trade gets announced. And like, I'm doing all the frantic things, right? I'm like, oh no, this is Chris Johnson. I follow Chris Johnson. I'm like, but I'm going through the account and like making sure that everything is right, because I don't want to like go to work thinking that Tomas Hertl's been traded and then find out later like I'm an idiot. It's just somebody with a blue check mark that spoofed the account, right?
No, so it was Tomas Mertl. My bad.
Right.
Who is a real player, by the way, just for the record.
So yeah. I was just like, fuck. What, like, is this gonna happen? And so I think I have a lot of things, and we're definitely talking about, I think that's the one that we'll obviously finish on, because I think that's where the most of the conversation is going to be, and I think we can fly through some of the other ones here really, really quickly. Again, so if everyone watched today, we appreciate you watching earlier. I think what we do, and we do this kind of similar with the draft too, right? We'll do like a big live stream when the draft happens and then kind of do like a wrap-up show where we kind of more concisely break things down. So I think if you were here for the live stream, like, that's fun for live, but I don't think that has a ton of value on replay. I mean, maybe it does for some people. So the idea here is
it was a lot of
yeah. So I like what we tried to do here is kind of, you know, be more concise, and we're definitely going to talk about things, but we've had some time to reflect on it. We're not trying to react to anything in the moment, and kind of go from there. So I guess we can start with the first trade that I have here. And that is that the San Jose Sharks acquired Klim Kostin from the Detroit Red Wings. The Detroit Red Wings get Radim Šimek and a 2024 seventh round pick, which is owned by New Jersey. Just some quick stuff on Costin. Here he was a first overall pick, not a first overall, first round pick, sorry, in 2017. In this season with Detroit, he played 33 games. He has 3 goals and assists, 4 points. He's a minus two and has 28 penalty minutes. He had a career high in Edmonton in 57 games. He had 11 goals, 10 assists, and 21 points. That was only a year ago. So that's the first trade. Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Any thoughts on this trade here?
Say, let's start with Mark. We haven't let him talk yet.
Yeah,
right. No.
I'm sorry, Mark. Did I
appreciate it? No, it's all good. I feel like this is one of the better trades Greer made on the day, mostly just because Schmeck at this point really obviously had no future with the Sharks. His deal has pretty much sucked for, 2+ years now? He's always kind of been injured. And a seventh rounder in the grand scheme of things is not a big deal. So you get a guy who's young, big body, which we know Greer and Quinn like, and depth forward. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, this doesn't move the franchise one way or another. But I'd say I at least like the value exchange there.
Kevin.
You know, we've been praising Radim Šimek for most of the season as the newly and quickly departed named captain of the Barracuda this season, who are playing right now, too. There's no update. It's halfway through the game at 0-0. Radim Šimek has been one of the only stable, solid defensemen and reliable players on the AHL franchise this season. And to see him go now, I mean, from a cap perspective, it makes sense. He's in the final year of his deal. I mean, all those years where we had off-season shows on Teal Town USA saying, oh, buy him out, and no, now's not the time. Well, they didn't have to buy him out. They got some value for it. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, Clem Costin making kind of same money as Radim Šimek, and now we added another year of that. So we got a seventh round pick out of it. I thought they might just let Šimek walk, but hey, Clem Costin had a good year last year, and it looked like he was going to finally turn his career around. Kind of, he reminds me a lot of Filip Zadina in a way, like a player who hasn't quite gotten to the expectation. And I guess they're going to be line mates now on the Sharks, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, and Filip Zadina was the first name that came to my mind, too, when this trade went down. Just kind of a similar situation, right? Like a guy who looked like he had kindly found his game in Edmonton and then got moved over to Detroit. Hasn't really worked out for him in Detroit. I don't hate this trade. I mean, it's $2 million next year. I don't think that's a horrible deal for him. I think it's fine. Cap's going up. And the Sharks have a ton of cap space now, apparently. You know, and also, you know, but I do want to echo what you said about Radim Šimek. I think Radim Šimek has been a guy who I've sung the praises of all year for his play with the Barracuda, for being a good soldier down there. I think he's done, you know, I it's really easy to be a guy who ends up being in the AHL based on contract or just, you know, new coach, she doesn't jive with you and you end up in the AHL. It's really easy to go down there and be boo-boo faced and be like, I'm an NHLer, what the hell am I doing here? And Radim Šimek, from all accounts, has been nothing but professional to the point where they named him the captain. That's probably the kiss of death, I think, now is Barracuda captain. If you're captain, you're out.
For real.
So I think, you know, I have nothing but nice things to say about Radim Šimek. The only question I have is, did they assign him to Grand Rapids?
I was going to look at that, but with all the Sharks movement today, I didn't even get to my around the league like review yet. And so, I mean, there are some trades around the league that I'm sure are going to be news to me at this point.
Yeah, because I have questions because, like, I know he wasn't up in the NHL, so I guess they could just assign him to Grand Rapids after trading for him, and he would still be eligible for the playoffs if they sent him there then, I would assume. That's the only question I have, and I don't have the answer to it in front of me.
Sorry, I tried to speak and then I had a video That's coming okay. up, freaking TSN. You're correct on that. And today, folks, as well, was AHL playoff eligibility date. I forget what we call it officially, but anyway, so players needed to be assigned to the AHL. That's why you saw Bortolo in a transaction get sent down. Krona was sent down. They're immediately getting recalled back to the Sharks, but just to make sure that they don't use one of the, I believe it's four spots that they can send down. I don't remember how the rule is. Every year I feel like I learn something new about it.
So the chat saying that he was loaned to Grand Rapids. So that makes sense.
Thanks. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about Radim Šimek. I think turning Radim Šimek, who you were going to let walk in free agency anyway at this point, like I can't see him coming back for another round of just like on an AHL deal. And I don't think the Sharks were going to give him another two-way deal. So it seemed like him and the Sharks were kind of at an end. So to turn that into anything, I think is a tidy bit of business for Mike Greer.
Yeah, they love their first round, former first round reclamation projects at this point. It seems like that's the theme right now. Yeah. If maybe we can pull any sort of magic out of one of these guys who was once highly touted.
Yeah. And the Barracuda aren't making the playoffs. That is true too. All right. So let's move on to the next trade. Let's see what I fired up here next. This is a conditional third round pick in 2024 for Nikita Ochuk. The 2024 condition is, I guess Chicago has two picks and we get the better of the two.
It is fifth rounder, right?
Fifth rounder. Yes. I'm fifth sorry. Okay. Yes. I have third on the screen, but it is a fifth. Who wants to go first?
For me, Nikita Ochuk really didn't do it for me. I mean, when he was acquired by the Sharks in the Timo Meier trade last year, I thought, there are worse options. There are worse players that the Sharks could have acquired. I mean, he's a physical player, especially at the time last year. I know Ochuk was injured coming to the organization and then had surgery as soon as he arrived. So we didn't get to see him last year, but at the time there was a massive need for massive physical defensemen. And he started out the year hurt. I don't know if he ever really found his ground. And then I think from a management perspective with having to clear waivers and everything, I think that's the real reason he was on the Sharks, because in his conditioning stint, he was not good for the Barracuda. No. And he did not look any better with the Sharks, to be honest. I felt like time after time after time, he was not in the right defensive position. He's chasing players in behind the net, which you should not do as a defenseman. I think the Sharks were lucky to get more than a sixth or a seventh round pick, to get a high fifth round pick out of this. I'm okay with it, guys.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. For me, I pretty much agree on the assessment of Ochuk. I think he had some raw tools that looked pretty good when you watched him, but for the most part, he never really impressed with the Sharks. I was hopeful when we got him, seeing that he was like a former second rounder. And I also would love the Sharks to have like a good physical defenseman. But I don't really think he was that. So I really have no issues with moving him, since he falls into what I think is that massive logjam of guys who could be like bottom pairing defensemen, if that. So moving him for me is not really an issue. And fifth rounder, yeah. I mean, I doubt anyone has plans with him being like their defenseman, so who's gonna give up more than that is really the point. So a fifth rounder is fine. Like you said, Lacey, it's gonna probably be a high fifth rounder. So yeah, it's, again, it's more of like a neutral trade at this point. It was a piece we had to move and we moved it and we got draft capital.
Yeah, I hate Nikita Ochuk. I'm not even going to try and pretend like I have anything nice to say about him. I don't think he's a particularly good defenseman. I have asked repeatedly on After Dark this year, why is he not on the Barracuda where he belongs? I'm happy to see him go. I thought that they should have waived him multiple times a season. Like when they were playing defenseman at forward, it's like, why? Like, just send Nikita Hotchkiss down and play your defenseman at defense. I don't know. I'm shedding no tears. I strongly dislike Nikita Hotchkiss as a I'm sure he's a nice guy, but as a player, like, I have not been impressed with him this year, and I'm
Hey, at least when Nikita Hotchkiss came in, he could be the translator for Shakir Mukhamadulin as he transitioned to coming to the U.S. for the first time, or at least full time, I should say. So
yeah,
he did have value in that.
I'm sure he's a nice guy. Like, I don't want to like make him sound like he's the worst human being on the planet. But as far as players go, like, I just thought, I don't know what the shark saw in him. I don't know what David Quinn sees in him. To have him spend as much time in the NHL as he did, I don't know. It is what it is.
Is that all we got for that trade?
Yeah, I think so.
So I want to bring something up here, sure. And I think the timing is pretty darn good.
Okay.
Yesterday we should talk about the Anthony DeClaire trade, because I don't think that's been covered yet here on Teal Town USA.
Oh, we covered it.
Yesterday. And with that, Jack Thompson, who was acquired in the deal, has put up his first point with an assist. Yay. On Oscar Lindblom's goal to open up the scoring in the Barracuda Texas Stars game. And they've now actually put up a second goal. They get two goals in 42 seconds from Lindblom. And then Jordy Bell-Reeve, who was recently acquired from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. So 2-0 all of a sudden. Barracuda were getting outshot 18-5 after the first, and now outshooting Texas 16-5 in the second. And they got the two goals. So, but yeah, Anthony DeClaire for Jack Thompson and a third round pick, and I believe a seventh went to Tampa Bay as part of that. But what are you guys thinking of that?
I'll let Mark go, because I've said all I can say about
I think that was a fairly good trade. We knew DeClaire was going to move, and he seems open to possibly coming back in the offseason. That doesn't typically happen, but I mean, he seems open to it. I really like DeClaire. I was a really big fan of his here in his semi-short stint. But getting a third rounder for him is decent. I don't have much of an opinion on Thompson, as I haven't really watched him, but his numbers look decent, and I've read some of the prospect ranking reports and where he kind of fit in with Tampa. And while they had a pretty mediocre prospect pool, he was one of their higher rated prospects. So I'd ask you guys, as the AHL experts, in terms of, like, if you guys think he has an NHL future. From what I've read, it seems like he does have an NHL future, but overall for DeClaire, I think that's a good move.
The thing with the Barracuda is they only play the Pacific Division, and they play one or two teams from the Central. They don't. It's not like the NHL where you play everyone. So I don't really see a lot of Syracuse games. Like, my AHL package just is Barracuda games. I don't have the other games, so I don't really have much to say about him. He played here in the Sioux, but I don't remember watching him. But it was like he played in the Sioux at like when we were coming out of COVID too. So I don't know if there was like if it was a situation where. You know, that there just wasn't as many seats available because they're trying to still socially distance or whatever. I didn't really get too many of like the ending of the COVID era games in, for the Greyhounds. But I remember people being pretty positive about him here. Like I talked to a few guys today about it, more like season ticket holding Greyhounds fans, and they liked him. They had a lot of good things to say about him, so I think that's positive. It's a good trade, right? I think for Anthony DeClaire, probably Micra's best trade of the last few days, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jack Thompson's quite a mobile defenseman. I mean, I don't think he's going to be flying out there, but definitely is a mobile defenseman. I don't have a whole lot of notes from him. I distinctly remember in his draft year him being one of the lesser scouted players who suddenly became a third round pick. So I only was able to rely on so many notes, but I know that he was mobile and offensive. And so far, I mean, in his AHL career, he's got half a point per game. He had 23 points last year as a rookie, which I think is pretty respectable. Yeah. And then now this season in 46 games, he's got 33 points after the assist that he has in his debut tonight. So I think the Sharks kind of look at this as a Ty Emberson type of acquisition in a way, where he's a player who you know, was on some radars, but not the biggest name, but came in and improved from year one to year two, as Emberson did. And yeah, I think it's a win-win. And I think Duclair for a third round pick was spot on. So the fact that you then add Thompson on top of that, this is one of the times where I think that Mike Greer did very well in his asset management.
And then it goes over.
Yeah, and that third rounder looks like it could be in the middle of the round based on how Tampa's playing this year. So that could be a pick in what, like the 70s, yeah. Maybe late 70s. Yeah. Not bad.
What do we got next? We have, drum roll, please.
We probably have like Devin Cooley.
We have Devin Cooley coming to the San Jose Sharks for a 2025 seventh round pick that belonged to the Washington Capitals. I guess Devin Cooley is a local guy, so that's cool, I guess. Devin Cooley is a, what do I have? I have here. He's a 6'5", 195 pound left catching goalie in 14 games with the Rochester Americans. He has a 3.77 GAA, a 0.891 save percentage. He's 6'6", 2". Rochester, for those who are curious, is a team that is, they are 5th in the North Division, 10th in the Eastern Conference, and 19th overall in the AHL, to give you some perspective on the quality of the team in front of him. I don't really know a ton about Devin Cooley here. This is why I'm glad I have Mark here. Mark, anything you can tell us about Devin Cooley?
Not much, actually.
Yeah. Right.
So I know he's at Denver, and I know he had a year overlap with Magnus Corona, but I have not watched him. I see his stats. He had some good years in Denver. Well, they're okay. But I never really judge goalies below the NHL level by their stats, because you just never know who's playing in front of them. You know, sometimes you'll see a guy who's a decent goalie, and even their AHL stats are just like mediocre, unless they're like a game changer. I feel like it really depends on what defense you have in front of you and what team you have in front of you. So I know he's a big body, that's a good thing, but he's undrafted, and I'm sure there's some sort of sentimental element of the fact that he's from the Bay Area and played with the Junior Sharks.
Yeah, it doesn't make up for not drafting Dustin Wolf, as is being said in the chat.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really know if this is a move really just to have a goalie, because we haven't gotten to the other trade, but we moved a goalie out, right? And then have some injuries. So it could be just like a depth move for a goalie. But do we know if he's going to be with the CUDA?
Apparently he is reporting to San Jose. So I don't know what they haven't said anything yet. I'm assuming with Kakinen going out, like, he's playing. Because Blackwood's not ready yet. That's what I feel like I read today. Blackwood's still not ready, so he's got to be in there.
Let me talk about Devin Cooley here. Devin Cooley is a 6'5". He's a tall goalie. He played, I believe, all 4 years with the University of Denver. He started out his professional career at in the ECHL. He had a minor league contract that he worked his way up. I recall 2 years ago in the playoffs for Milwaukee, he was the backup because I believe Connor Ingram got injured, and he started out the playoffs, which Milwaukee, I believe, was the bottom seed against Manitoba, the top seed, either that or it was a 2-7 matchup. And I remember Cooley had a 40 save shutout coming in as the backup with very few games under his belt. Followed that up with a 43 saves win in game two the very next night. So in back-to-back nights, Devin Cooley put up 83 saves as a backup goalie. They ended up winning the series because, if I recall, games three and four, Connor Ingram came back in, lost both of those. They put Devin Cooley in game five and won the series. So Devin Cooley, let me just say, I know I'm getting really excited right now. He's a 26-year-old goalie. He's an older goalie. It's going to be kind of an Aaron Dell situation. But I'm okay with a seventh-round pick coming in for this guy because he's got size. Atu Mäkiniemi's not coming back. Let's not fool ourselves. If he even gets qualified for next season, which I doubt, he's probably going back to Finland, given that he cannot stay healthy and cannot get in the lineup. And he hasn't seized the opportunities that have been presented to themselves. So you get Devin Cooley in. You've got some injuries, you put him in. If it doesn't work out, it's fine. It's a seventh round pick, you move on. But I like the homegrown story, and as we will allude to, this organization needs some positivity here, because with Hurdle gone, you bring in a local boy like Devin Cooley, at least it's something. So I'm okay with this trade.
So here's my thoughts, okay? I said this yesterday when we were talking about the game. You know, obviously Magnus Corona started the game yesterday. I said that the real shame for the Sharks right now is that they have no choice but to put Magnus Corona in net. Because as you alluded to, E2 Makanyemi is sick. The word is it's mono, which is better than, you know, which is better than a lot of the other things that it could have possibly been. So that's a positive. But like Magnus Corona, Georgi Romanov, these are first year pros. They shouldn't be put in this situation. And it's kind of criminal that the Sharks have had to put them in this situation with Mackenzie Blackwood being out and now Kakanen going out the door. The thing I like about this is a guy who has played a lot of pro hockey. He doesn't have anything in the NHL, but he's been around. Like he's been in the game. I would much rather bring Devin Cooley in and put him in net and have, if he gets killed, yes, okay, that sucks, but this isn't your goalie of the future. This is your Aaron Dell replacement. This is your guy that can go in, can play these minutes and not completely destroy the confidence of guys that you think may be good. Now, I don't know if there's a NHL goaltender in Magnus Corona, but you're not doing him any favors by continuing to put him in these situations with the Sharks, especially with the Sharks being what they are now.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I actually think that's why the New Jersey Devils made the moves that they made today in acquiring Jake Allen and Kaapo Kakkonen. And I think that's because they're looking at Akira Schmid and Nico Daws and going, these guys aren't NHLers yet. I know Akira Schmid was like the flavor of the month in the playoffs last year, but he was way beyond his development curve at that point.
Yeah.
And so acquiring Allen and acquiring Kakkonen at least kind of puts things back into alignment. And I think that's kind of where acquiring Vanecek, although he's hurt too, and Cooley goes for the development of Corona and Romano.
Yeah, so let me talk about throw Kakanen. The graphic up here quick. So San Jose acquires Vitek Vanecek, goalie, obviously, in the Devils 7th round pick. I think that's a pick they move later on. They get Kaapo Kakkonen in return. I'll go first, I guess, for this one. Kaapo Kakkonen's a guy who I had questions about going into this trade deadline and going into next year, right? Because I'm always very skeptical of a guy who's amazing when there's money due and then is very mediocre when there's no money due. And that has been the story of Kaapo Kakkonen in San Jose. When he's had money due, he's been really good. And then when he, you know, the year that he wasn't owed money, he was okay at best. I don't like this trade, though. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, Vitek Vanecek is a guy who makes more money. Now, the one thing I will say about Vanecek is this is kind of the first year where he's kind of been shit. He has had some pretty decent numbers before this in limited starts. I don't know. I mean, I don't understand this one, especially with Vanecek being a player who probably won't play for the Sharks this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go, Mark, but just real quick to that. Kakkonen wasn't coming back next year. Vanecek will.
Yeah.
And as we've established, Corona and Romanov should not be in the NHL next year.
Oh, I agree.
So at least the Sharks should theoretically have two NHL goalies at the start of next season. So, Mark, what's up?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely an element of it. When this trade happened, I was very confused. I was like, I just don't understand. I was waiting for there to be another detail of the trade. Like, maybe there was, like, a mid-round pick coming back. I mean, a seventh rounder is a seventh rounder. It's fine. I don't care about it in the Devin Cooley trade, and I'm not going to care about it here. But I just was very confused because I was like, I think Kakkonen has been decent on this god-awful team this year, right? And being that it was rumored he was going to get moved, I think I expected a little bit more. I get that we have now another year of Vanecek, and Vanecek at his best has been a decent goalie. So, I really don't see much of a downside to it. It was more just, I was confused by the move. I didn't really see, much of an upside either. I mean, I don't know. It's a meh move in my mind, but I'm not really upset about it.
Devils are fascinating too, because like they did a lot of weird things today. Like if you look at what the Devils did today, they did a lot of strange things because this is a team who they're technically in the race, but I think that the odds are very against them sneaking into the playoffs. Like someone's going to have to completely bottom out for them to get in.
They'd have to go on a crazy run.
And they'd have to go on a crazy run, and someone else, like other teams, plural, would have to bottom out. So they did some weird things today. But with some of the weird stuff they did today, you're helping them out because you're giving them a goalie who's cheaper. I don't know. I still wonder if you could have gotten more from the Devils from this too. Like, it's fine. I think it's fine. I think that Vanecek and Blackwood should be a perfectly serviceable tandem next year. Especially, and looking at it, Vanecek can find his game again, like Blackwood has found his game this year. After, you know, sometimes the change of scenery does guys good. We might look back at this one later and be like, yeah, okay, that wasn't so bad. I think they'll be a perfectly serviceable tandem. I don't know if, you know, if anyone is the goalie of the future, quote unquote. And with everything else the Sharks have done, I don't think goalie of the future right now matters, because I don't think they're close to contending for a long fucking time.
Yeah, I think it's an apples for apples trade. I backup goalie for a backup goalie, or 1B for a 1B, however you want to look at it. I think it's okay for both teams. I think from the Devils' perspective, you know, I like that they had a weird deadline, because I thought it would be a bad move if they really pushed to try and make the playoffs. But I also thought it would be a bad move to just be outright sellers. So they traded Tyler Toffoli. I can't even remember who they acquired. They acquired a forward. I know that. But shift some goalies around. You never know. I think for them, they're like,
well, they got Jake Allen.
We did
too.
Some things to change it up. If it works, that's awesome. And if it doesn't, they're not hurt by it. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's weird. And I don't want to like get too deep on the Devils. I just thought they had a weird of everyone. I
they
thought
did.
They had a very weird trade deadline. I guess that brings us to the main event. Oh, I didn't make it big enough. Silly me. It's fine. I can't even make it work. Why? Don't worry. There we go. Let's make that bigger. All right. Super, super technical Bravo stuff here going on. The San Jose Sharks acquire forward David Edstrom and the Golden Knights 2025 first round pick, not this year's, next year's first round pick, for Tomas Hertl, with the Sharks retaining 17.1% salary. That 0.1 is very important. The Sharks also gave them their 2025th and 2027 third round pick. And this happened right before I went to work. And it was so annoying because I'm like trying to like check my phone at work without getting in trouble. Trying to see like what the full deal was. Oh man, I have a lot to say here, and it's good because we have like a lot of time to really sink our teeth into this one. Mark, I'm gonna start with you, just broad thoughts, and then we can kind of really dig into this one.
Yeah. Heartbreaking for sure. I think, as most people will say, like Hertl is obviously one of most people's favorites. Like if you're a Sharks fan, you have to love Hertl, right? I still am, I think, digesting it. I have had time, and I think I flip-flop every other hour as to whether I like this deal or not. I think time will tell. Same thing happened with Timo Meier trade. Same thing is kind of happening with the Erik Karlsson trade. These trades that involve like these high picks and prospects, and where you're shipping out a guy who is not just loved but also a really good player, it's always going to play with your emotions. And I'm trying to put my emotions aside and like analyze it from a hockey perspective. And I think in the end, I feel good about the move, but I just have questions about aspects of it, like throwing in the third rounders, using up a retention spot for 6 years. You know, is Edstrom really have much upside. I think he's more of like another Bisted in terms of like maybe he's a third line center, a second liner at best. Why wasn't it the 2024 first round pick? Why is it 2025? Like this year, Vegas's first round pick could be in the late teens, whereas, I mean, people think that team could collapse in the next couple of years because of all their cap issues. But I also look at the fact that next year, who knows, maybe they could, that could be like 30th overall. Is that worth it for Hurdle? So like, these are a lot of questions that I still have about the trade, and I'm still like digesting on an hourly basis.
That's where I was going to go with it, actually, Mark, what you just said about their first round pick. If I'm the Sharks or any other team who traded with Las Vegas over the last couple of days, why wouldn't you want your 2024 first, the 2024 first round pick? Right now, they're sitting at 73 points, which is 7.
I think they're
going to
win the cup this year.
What's that?
I think they're going to win the cup.
Well, I mean, so do they. They think they're going to win the cup too. And as they should, they made a lot of moves to try and to become repeat champions here. But I think it's good asset management by the Golden Knights to hold on to that first round pick through all the trades that they made. They got Hurdle.
Well, no, because they traded it to Calgary for Hanifin, but they could have. But the clause was, remember, if we trade it again, you can have next year's, but we just ended up taking next year's.
Yeah, I think you're a year off because Calgary is getting the 2026 first round pick.
I thought they
Vegas.
Got the 20. Yeah. Okay.
No.
Okay.
The 2025 one was the one, the we'll give it to you, but hang on.
But and hang on. Okay. And so and they, so okay,
the,
ha- they
the hang
okay.
on
I thought it
was
this
the
year's.
Tomáš Hertl trade. So exactly. It's been in the works, they said, for about 10 days now. Or 7 days now. And so
it's funny because we were all commenting on that too. We were like, that detail. We're like, what is that detail? And now it actually ended up coming full circle and impacting the Sharks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Let me, before we get on here, I just want to give some people some what's up on David Edstrom.
Yeah,
David
Edstrom
is a 19-year-old, 6'3", 190-pound left shot center. He's currently playing in the SHL for Frölunda. He's played 42 games. He has 6 goals, 11 assists, and 17 points with 8 penalty minutes, and he is a +9. He also played for Sweden's World Junior team this year. He had 3 assists. He was +4, and obviously was a part of a team that went to a silver medal in the World Junior Championship. Sorry, did I cut you off, Kevin?
No. But we actually need to backtrack back to Kakanen. But go ahead and talk about Hurdle, and we got to backtrack to Kakanen for
Let's
something.
Let's do Kakanen right now, because
John Swenson gave us a $10 super chat.
Oh,
thank you, John.
That.
I love the question that you presented. Does Kaapo Kakanen pull an Aiden Hill and win a cup this year for New Jersey? Well, I think we're probably all on the side of New Jersey's probably missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I would say no, but
I mean,
won the cup, there's a bonus.
Wait, hang on. Wouldn't that be insulting that we were talking about, or at least I was talking about last year, New Jersey needed to get into the conference finals last year and then suck this year so that the Sharks could get a first round pick? We know the Sharks are not getting a first round pick from New Jersey this year. But what if Kakanen actually did pull the Aiden Hill, and now suddenly the Sharks get the 32nd overall pick instead of somewhere around 48? That would be just mind-boggling.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, thank you, John. I'm sorry. I'm trying to watch a million things at once here, and I missed your super chat, and I do apologize for that. Obviously, we do look at any time that. You guys are kind enough to donate either in the super chat, the Venmo, whatever. It helps keep the lights on. We super appreciate that. John, sorry I missed your question. That is on me. I apologize. Look, I mean, anything can happen, right? I don't know, man. I was pretty wrong about Aiden Hill, obviously, so I'm probably the last person to ask. So I'm like, whatever. I'm not Kaapo Kakanen's biggest fan. I acknowledge he had a really good season this year and that his value is probably never going to be higher. I mean, if you look at what New Jersey's done, which has been really weird, they have a better chance of doing it with Kaapo Kakanen than they do with Jake Allen, that's for sure. So, I mean, there's that.
I agree with that.
but I don't think, at least this year, I don't think that they are playoff bound. I don't think you need, like, it, for all the talk about, like, the best goalies, right? Your Shesterkins, your Sorokins, guys like that. It's funny how, like, those guys are generally not the guys, like, with the exception of, I think, Vasilevsky. Who's like the super top rated goalie leading their teams? It's always those guys winning Stanley Cups, it feels like.
Yeah, I feel like it's a dead era of goalies, and I would never pay a goalie at this point more than, I think, maybe $6 million. I'm trying to think of, like, what the perfect number is, but if you have a good goalie, I still don't think I'd want to pay them more than like $6 million. You just can't allocate that kind of money, I think, to goalies, because I think there's just so many interchangeable goalies. Like, if you have bad goalies, it's more noticeable. Sure. But when you have good goalies, I feel like, yeah, I don't know. Even Shesterkin has bad runs. Like, before the last month, this year, he was pretty mediocre. I think his save percentage was below 900. So,
yeah, I would say Demko, Hellebuck, and Vasilevsky. Maybe, guys, we need to do another goalie pyramid like we did a few years ago.
That'd be fun. Yeah, because, like, that's the thing, like, for me, like, I think that it's nice to have a goalie, but I feel like it's always like these guys that are pretty mediocre that win cups, right? It's your Jordan Binnington's, it's your Aiden Hills. Those are the guys that seem to win the cups. It's with the exception of Vasilevsky, I can't think of like a tippy top goalie that's won a cup. We always talk about, you know, at least goalies that we talk about being the best goalie in the league. I don't think anyone's confusing Aiden Hill as one of the best goalies in the league, but he did perfectly good behind a really, really good Vegas team, and sometimes that's all you really need.
Yeah, there's a lot of goalies who could have won with that.
Bobrovsky, yeah, okay, Bobrovsky's a guy you could mention too, but I think Bobrovsky's all over the place too.
Severely overpaid.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I hope, John, I hope that answered your question. I hope you got your $10 worth out of that. let's get back to this hurdle thing though.
Yeah. So I saw Dank in the chat wrote something earlier. He said hurdle said Vegas or bust. And that's one of the big questions that I have, and it's been kind of mumbled about, is apparently about 10 days ago, Tomas Hertl had a discussion with Mike Greer. I don't know if that's actually been confirmed, but it's been scuttled about. Mm-hmm. Had a discussion about being traded with Mike Greer. And, you know, last year, a big part of why I liked or was content with the Timo Meier trade was the Sharks' hand was forced. They had to move him. They had to try and get the value for him. The Hertl trade did not have to happen right now from our perspective, but internally, maybe Hertl and Greer had some kind of falling out. Don't know. Did he force his hand? I don't know, but there's some mumblings. So
here's my thing with Hertl. I think there's going to be questions, right? And I think, you know, things will come out maybe things will come out later, and Hertl wanted the hell out. And if that's the case, that's fine. But I don't know that. And I'm not going to, like, I just, part of me wonders, like, because I don't know that, like, I think there's going to be a lot of copium to try and make this be easier to swallow, right? Well, maybe he wanted out, so it's fine. I don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know. So we're going to go off our raw emotions instead.
Damn right I am. I am.
That's what everyone came to see anyway, the angry Canadian robot.
This is my thoughts, okay? And I'm going to try and not just completely go off the rails here. I'm not, like, and the other thing too, I'm not going to be, I don't care about the destination. It'd be really hypocritical for Mr. It's a Business to come on here now and be like, they traded him to Vegas of all teams. Like, what the, you know, no, if you're waiting for that, you're not going to get that, because there's something, you know, I always come on here and I'd say, well, it's a business, and it is a business. And I think it's easy to forget that. To me, I think there's points in every sports, like in every person's fandom, where you come to a moment where you start to seriously question that fandom. And I think if you want to look for like points and other things that I can relate to in my lifetime, you're talking, like, for me, again, a kid from, you know, Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you're talking the Ballard Leafs, you know, you're talking the pre-Austin Matthews Leafs, you're talking Patrick Waugh getting traded to the Colorado Avalanche, where you're just, where you were like a normal, like a person, you know, whose fandom is probably usually never in question. Like, it makes you stop and go, what are we actually doing here? Like, what the hell are we doing here? I think for a lot of people, this is going to be one of those moments, man. I think there's going to be a lot of people being like, oof, what am I doing with this team? I'm not completely there. I think this is probably like to the end of the season, this will probably be the least invested in this team I think I've ever been. So let's talk about the trade itself. I have like a lot of things. I think Mark brought this up too. Like, I don't understand the price. I don't understand the reasoning. I don't understand the price. I mean, the biggest to me, and I'm trying to keep my thoughts in one place here, so I apologize. I'm a little scatterbrained. I'm trying to like make this make sense. The thing that I go back to is, why in the fuck did Joe Will make this contract to begin with? Without a new GM in place, like, that's the first question I have, right? Like, why in the fuck was Joe Will allowed to sign this contract before we put a GM in place, before we decided what this team was going to be? It made no sense to me at that point. But then we signed him, and I'm like, cool, Tomáš Hertl's going to be here for the long haul. Because, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, oh no, this is fine, we're rebuilding, this is what happens. I think you're right. But I think you can look down the highway to a little team called the Los Angeles Kings. You don't have to fucking trade everyone and strip it down to the Bolts. You don't have to fucking do... Look who's still there. Drew Doughty's still there. Anze Kopitar's still there. Like, to me, the part that frustrates me about this trade is that, like, you have Logan Couture, who isn't going to play again this season. Who knows what's going to happen with Couture at this point? So who's left? Who's your fucking veteran? Marc-Edouard Vlasic? Great. Like, another guy who's seemed completely disengaged this season is now your veteran. That's the guy who's supposed to glue this shit together. It's brutal. And then, so let's look at the trade itself, right? 2/3. Why are we, not only are we retaining 17.1% salary, so, you know, to Vegas for 6 years, why 2/3? I don't understand. Like, yes, you're getting a first, but you're giving up Tomáš Hertl. And before any of you fucking morons say, oh, but Tomáš Hertl's damaged good, like, Tomáš Hertl, this is like the first injury he's had in quite some time. Like, I think the talk of Tomáš Hertl being this fucking brittle thing is so fucking overplayed at this point.
Yeah, I saw someone in the chat said, oh, his knees are giving out on him. He had surgery, what, a month ago? And they said he was 2 weeks away from returning. Being out for 6 weeks happens sometimes. His knees aren't falling apart here.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure where we are in the standings plays a role here. They said this was a surgery that was taking care of something that could be dealt with, I think, later on,
yeah,
right?
Oh, 100%.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't think his injuries really are a factor at this point. And I hate, the one thing, just adding to your point, Ian, I absolutely hate when everyone just assumes because you turn 30 that your game is going to decline like 20% each season. Like, we have so many examples that doesn't always happen. Nope. And especially with good players, just look at the Crosbys, even Burns, Pavelski, these guys are doing well into their 30s. Thornton had great years in his 30s. Marlowe had good years in his 30s. Like, just because you turn 30 doesn't mean you need to retire and that you can't make money.
Steven Stamkos could retire because he was only a 100-point player at 33 years old last year.
It's an absurd thought, and I see it so often. And that's the part for me that, Hertl has a lot of value. And that's one of the things I battle with this trade, because I think also once you put him on a good team, his numbers are going to shoot up again. The fact that he even put up the points he was putting up this season with this joke of a roster is insane. Like, there were nights where he was the only player on the ice who looked like a good player.
So Alec Vincent in the chat hard disagrees with me about LA. But I see, here's the thing with LA. LA is still on the come up. Like, this isn't the final destination for LA. Like, this is, you know, they've still got a couple of guys that are coming up in their system that are going to be very good players for this team. You're looking at a guy like Quentin Byfield, who I think is, you know, every time I feel like every time I turn around is scoring a highlight reel goal. The LA Kings, this isn't the destination. They are still on the come up.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I could
they're
see
where the Sharks should be in, well, should have been next year or the year after, but now it's probably going to be 4 years.
Yeah. This is a team on the come up. I can understand where you're coming from thinking, oh, well, you know, this team's like, you know, this is a team that's kind of been all over the place. LA, they get a goalie, man. They're going to be deadly.
Yeah. And they tried to get a goalie from what I understand. Yeah. Jacob Barlow says Brant Clark. They got Jordan Spence on the back end.
Team still on the come up. They're not at the height of their power yet. They're still coming. Honestly, the fact that they've been able to be in the playoffs the last couple of years, I think has been just kind of a testament to what they're doing. They're on the come up. They're going to be good.
I'm going to let you guys continue to run with this, but one thing I want to say that really irks me, because again, the two third round picks that are being sent with Hurdle because his contract is so expensive. Well, if it's so expensive, then Vegas needs to figure that out on their own, besides saying like an hour later just to kick the whole league in the balls, or maybe kick him in the spleen. Mark Stone's going to be out for the rest of the season. Gee, wow, amazing timing. Fuck off with that, Vegas. But anyway.
I believe them. A ruptured spleen is serious business. I assume like when you announce something like that, like it's got to be legit. Like, and a ruptured spleen, serious business.
I want to see the x-rays, damn it.
Yeah, no, but I'm sure like Hurdle's knee will get healthy just in time for the playoffs to start and the cap not to matter, and you know, Alec Martinez will suddenly, you know, he will be the Kevin Nash getting out of the wheelchair gif.
Shea Theodore too.
Yeah, like, but I believe I will be shocked if we see Mark Stone again this year, but the rest of them I'm expecting the Kevin Nash getting out of the wheelchair gif.
Yeah, but anyway, what I wanted to say was, what frustrates me is the Sharks traded Hurdle from a value of he's going to be a third line center for Vegas, because he could be. He might be the second line center. He might be the third line center. But they sold from a value of he'll be your third line center. The Sharks should have been selling, in my opinion, as he's our first line center. So if you want him, if you want a player like this, pay up. And that's the big problem that I have. Why are we including two-thirds? If the two-thirds, like it was originally discussed from Bob McKenzie, the two-thirds were coming to the Sharks. Even then, everyone was in an uproar. So to now have those two-thirds, nope, they're going from San Jose to Vegas, is just the extra gut punch. And that's a tough pill for me to swallow. Like, I like David Edstrom. Someone like 15 minutes ago in the chat wanted me to talk about David Edstrom. So like, I like David Edstrom. I think a lot of people love David Edstrom. I like him. He's more of a defensive center to me. I had him 28th on my board in the draft last year, and I believe he went 32nd over. Oh yeah, of course, Vegas won the cup. Don't remind me. He went 32nd overall. But I think he does have some late blooming offensive upside, and it reminds me a lot of Josh Norris, or it reminds me a lot of Philip Bystedt, and everyone seems to love Philip Bystedt. So why are we shitting all over David Edstrom just because we're mad that Tomas Hertl was traded? Like I'm okay with the assets that we got. I just think sell from the perspective that he's our first line center. Like, we should be getting more than one first round pick and last year's first round pick.
Yeah. I think what you were saying about Edstrom, I mean, I think it's a valuable piece in the future. He is big. He can skate. I watched every Sweden game during the World Juniors and I barely noticed him. So I don't think he stood out in that aspect, but that was a very strong team. He was playing more of a third line role there. So, you know, maybe that kind of held him down a tiny bit offensively. But, you know, you can never have too many centers in your team, especially guys who are 6'3", right? So he can skate 6'3". That's valuable. I think I'm kind of with both of you, though, in like you guys said, just the value. It just, to me, doesn't add up. You think about that, those third rounders, like in 2025, a third rounder for the Sharks is likely going to be what, the 64th, 65th, 66th pick. And the Vegas first could really end up being the 32nd. So that's a 30 pick difference by us throwing in that third rounder. Now 30 picks, yeah, obviously to move up is a decent amount, but then you're just throwing also in the 27th third rounder. And this is because of what? Like, I just don't understand why the Sharks needed to do that. And this is one of the things I tweeted out a few hours ago. Does Vegas really say no to that trade if Greer says, no, I'm not throwing in that third rounder?
Not throwing in the third tweet.
Like, there's no way Vegas says no. So why is it in the trade? Yeah. Like, I don't understand why it's in the trade. And now the Sharks have no retention spots for next year, right? Mm-hmm. And then we'll have Carlson for 2 more years after that. I think Burns comes off next year. And Hurdle we have for 6 years. Now, I don't think cap is ever going to be an issue for the Sharks over the next 4 or 5 years. If anything, we're going to be scrambling for the floor, it looks like, with what we've got as a roster. But I just don't understand what conversations went down and how we ended up throwing in 2 extra third rounders to that deal. Because, like, I forget whether it was you, Ian, or you, Lacey, who said it, I was even kind of confused with the original deal of the thirds going to the Sharks. I was like, eh, I still don't really like this.
Yeah.
But now that we know they're going the other way, just it's like salt in the wound. I'm like, what the fuck was the purpose of that? And how did that become part of this deal? Yeah. We're retaining for 6 years. I don't get it. They got Hurdle at $6.7 million.
That's the part that gets me, right? Like, I'm fascinated to see, like, what the Golden Knights are going to have to do this summer again, because it's going to be another guy who's going to get, you know, who's going to have to be tossed aside to make room for Hurdle to be there long term. So, I mean, that's going to be fascinating. But I mean, like, from the Sharks' perspective, I just, like, I don't understand. And, like, third picks are whatever, but it still doesn't mean, like, just because, like, sometimes picks or whatever, especially third-round picks made by the Sharks, like, not a good history there. But I don't, like, okay, picks or whatever, but, I, you know, because I've seen that a lot, too. It's like, oh, picks or whatever, who cares? But you're overpaying. Like, plain and simple, you're overpaying. Like, you're, by retaining salary for 6 years, you've done, and again, I'm trying not to be overly emotional because of the team on the other side of this. I'm just trying to look at it strictly from a Sharks perspective. Why are we sending these picks out to do the other team a favor, whether it be the Vegas Golden Knights or a team that we're completely milquetoast about, like let's say if this was Carolina, right? Does the third round pick still piss me off? And I don't give a shit about the Carolina Hurricanes. And the third round picks still make me angry. That's, you know, like, I don't know.
It's just poor asset management, I think, in that case. And I actually am a person who's very high on draft picks. Like, any draft capital, I always think is something good, because you could always use that to get something else, whether it's moving up in the draft or even like a third rounder for a team in the playoffs turned into Duclair, right? Yeah. Like, these are valuable assets. And especially for people like us who really pay attention to the prospects and the development, you see what happens, what a draft pick turns into. And I never understand just throwing them away all willy-nilly, right? Like, they are valuable. And third rounders, while they've been a curse for the Sharks, for the most part are still valuable picks. This is top 100 players at the draft, right? Yeah. Generally, if you're in the top part of that third round. Any part of the third round.
Yeah, like, one of the Sharks' best prospects right now, just not the story to cut you off, Mark, but one of the prospects I'm highest on right now was a third rounder. Daniel Gushin was drafted in the third round.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, and it's like, they're all lottery tickets, right? That's how the draft works. But still, it's like, when you're rebuilding, you want as many of those as possible. So it's just, there's so many little details of this trade that just piss me off, whether it's the retention for 6 years, the fact that we threw in third rounders, the fact that the first rounder is in 2025, not 2024. Like, it's just these little details. Then it's just like, you add those all together and you're just like, what the fuck, right? Yeah. Like, what the fuck happened here?
What I've been looking at while you guys have been chatting here, I've been trying to find up David Edstrom's recent stats. And because I know on the Teal Town Live today, one of the common themes that I thought was incorrectly grumbled about was David Edstrom only has 17 points in the SHL this season. He's a 19-year-old playing in the top tier in Sweden. Typically, those roles are fourth line or a fifth line role where they might be lucky enough to get 5 minutes a night or a couple of shifts. Now, David Edstrom's probably, I'm going to guess, getting 8-9 minutes a night. But what I'm looking at here for Frölunda is, at least for the last two games, he got elevated to the first line for Frölunda.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. I'm magically just shopping David Edstrom here for the Sharks to get a better look at, it looks like. So just something quirky I noticed here. But I think 17 points is very good. And I think Jules mentioned that's more than what Philip Bystedt has this year in the SHL. And he's getting far better minutes with Lynch opening. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to, the chat's like moving like crazy here. We got a ton of people watching, so I apologize.
Chat's
if I'm
not awesome. We're trying to keep up with you.
We're
guys.
Trying to keep up and we try are, and keep this on the rails so we get out of here going. At a decent time. Mark, Denver Doyle in the chat asking, do you think Bystedt and Musty are on the Sharks next year?
No. I think Bystedt is with the Barracuda and Musty. I want to say I think he's too good for the OHL right now, but. I don't know if he's NHL ready. And again, it's like, do we want to throw these highly rated prospects into this gauntlet where they're like forced into first and second line roles against teams where they're getting shelled 7-1 on a weekly basis? Like, I don't know. I have my whole vision at this point is if we win the lottery and we get Celebrini, I think you hold everyone until that 25-26 season. And then you do like a big bang approach where Will Smith's ready, Celebrini's ready, Musty's ready, and then you're bringing these guys in, A, so that they all kind of bond and gel together, but B, they're all a year stronger, a year more ready, a year more mentally mature, and then maybe also you can use a lot of that cap space to bring in some veterans to fill in around them. But I'm scared of throwing any of these 19 and 20-year-olds into the NHL next year.
Yeah, here's the thing, like, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about having guys that, you know, that have still been there that could be around, like Tomáš Hertl, especially with Logan Couture being a big question mark at this point. Logan Couture is not going to play again this year. So why you still need guys like that around. The part that would make me really nervous right now is because we've seen teams historically fuck up their rebuilds, right? And I think if you want to look at another team in the Pacific Division, the Edmonton Oilers, before they had to rebuild their rebuild, that's exactly what they did. It was all their kids in the NHL at once. They just handed over the keys to them. And it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was Taylor Hall and it was Jordan Eberle and it was Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and they just got handed the keys, you know, and they didn't really bring in the veterans to support them. And that, like, so the idea of bringing a guy like Musty in next year who could play in junior for another little while, right? Like, he can play a junior another year and he'd probably be fine there. He can't play in the AHL. That's fine. Like, that terrifies. Like, I don't want to do that because look at what happened. Like, not that Edmonton's winning Stanley Cups now, but like, they had to go through, basically, they rebuilt their rebuild because they just threw the kids to the fire thinking, oh, well, we have the kids. It'll be fine.
You brought up the exact point I wanted to bring up, Ian. So I'm glad we're all on the same page here. I mentioned on Twitter earlier today, I think one thing that I do commend Mike Greer for was, look, we're 2 years into a rebuild. When we did the Teal Town Live where Hertl was signed, I said, this is a 3-year window because he had that 3-year no, 3 years no movement or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There's your window to try and rebuild the team. If it fails, trade Hertl, blow it up. And here we are after year two, and Mike Greer has done exactly that. And I don't think you guys disagree that these 2 years have not gone well with the rebuild. So, but now we do get in danger of, don't let this be Edmonton, don't let this be Buffalo, where you're rebuilding your rebuild and then you have to rebuild again.
Right. Here's the question, keeping kids in lower levels. Like, I'm not saying keep everyone in the A until they're 25, right? Like, I think, like, you know, people talk about the Detroit model. I mean, it's really easy to do the Detroit model when you're fucking top six and top four defensemen are all future Hall of Famers. Really easy to keep your guys in the minor leagues there, right? Like, I think that's a bullshit talking point. I'm not saying keep them down. I'm just saying you don't have to put a guy like Quinton Musty into the NHL at 19 just to have him there, just to try and sell tickets. Because again, if you make business decisions ahead of hockey decisions, the hockey suffers and then the business suffers. That's just the way this works.
Yeah, and also what you were saying, Lacey, about the rebuild. I think the Sharks are a couple years behind where they should be in the rebuild, A, because of that lost pick that turned into Stützle, right? Yes. And then just in general, you know, the changing of the GMs, Greer then deciding to move down in the draft, which gave us more of, what's the word? Not volume. More picks as opposed to a single shot with, I think, which would have been like Lekkerimaki or the Finn Kemmel. So, you know, I think the Sharks in these rebuilds, so much of it is luck, right?
Yeah.
With the lottery system, 100%. You have to get that luck. I mean, you look at the Rangers, the years they finished first with the first overall pick and the second because of the lottery, that was a lot of luck, right? But they're also unlucky in the fact that those were years that the first overall pick wasn't a guy who's a generational talent. Or yep. The year it was Kaapo Kakko, he's not a generational talent at number two overall. Whereas if those were the years when Bedard was getting drafted or Hughes, you know, that could be a different huge thing for a franchise like the Rangers with the position they're in, right? And you look at the Sharks, we could come out of this 3 years from now never having a first overall pick. You know, that's mm-hmm. entirely possible. And that's why you have to build a huge inventory of draft picks, which is somewhat what Greer's trying to do, but I think he could do better with that. Like, I always look at Arizona, and they are in no way a model franchise, right? But that team knows how to get picks, right? They have, I feel like every year they've got six picks in the first two rounds. I don't even know how they do it. And then they use those to either move up or draft and have a million prospects in their pool and still never really get better. But
it's got to pan out for you at some point. Yeah. And so mm-hmm. the Coyotes keep acquiring all these picks, but when are they going to elevate their game?
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that with the Sharks. Finishing up on the Edstrom thing, 2 weeks ago, Edstrom was playing fourth line or 13th forward minutes for them. Pretty much across the board before that. February 22nd, he mysteriously got elevated to the second line for two games and then the first line ever since. I have a gut feeling that Kelly McCrimmon said, hey, we need you to get our guy some extra minutes here because. And don't think that doesn't happen, folks. Going with the prospect of the prospects that you're talking about, Mark, is do you think Eklund and Bortolo are the sacrificial lambs now?
Because that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about, too.
Because you see Eklund going through this. I don't know. I don't know if there's studies for it. I wonder what this does to someone's development. There's just nothing fun about losing the way the Sharks are losing. There's nothing fun about being in this situation. What does that do to someone's mentality? What does it do to someone's loyalty to the team? Like, what does it do to a 19, 20, 21-year-old mind who is excited to be in the pros, right? It's all gravy. But when you're getting shelled every single night and your building is half empty, like, just what does that do to you? I don't know. These are real legit questions. And that's one of what I'm concerned about.
Goes to your biggest rival.
Yeah. And it's like, these are the things. It's like, I am a big fan of veterans being around the youth movement. Like, that is important. They do need to learn from somebody. And you get rid of Hurdle, who's left? Kachor can't play. And it's like you said earlier, Vlasic is not the guy who we want to be the role model for our young players. The guy's sucked for like 3 years. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, listen, I have a soft spot for Vlasic back from when him and Braun were together for all those years. And he was the best defensive defenseman in the NHL.
Yep.
Like, he was amazing. But he's not good anymore. So it's like, who are these prospects learning from? Who are they coming up and hearing that veteran voice in the locker room? Is that person going to come be a free agency? I don't know. We have an endless cap space now, but I just don't love what I'm seeing. It's like, Will Smith's going to need someone to be there.
Yeah.
These guys are going to need somebody.
You know what? Something else in the chat. Sorry. Give me a second, Kevin.
Go ahead.
Something that was said in the chat earlier too, and it's like, oh, well, you know, Edstrom like is a guy that people feel could be developed to a higher ceiling. But then, like, the Sharks don't have a history of development. They're winning right now, which is good. Yay, Barracuda. But they're a fucking tire fire. And they've been a tire fire pretty much the whole time they've been here. Yep. It's like, yay, this guy's going to come to the Barracuda next year. Like, I'm not, this doesn't give me the excitement that it did a couple of years ago, right? Like, I don't know, Kevin, yeah. You watch the Barracuda as much as I do. Like,
no, you're right. You see the number of players. Ryan, we were supposed to be sold on Ryan Merkley becoming the next Erik Karlsson, and he became the next, I would not even say Lucas Karlsson, who was an AHL All-Star this year. So it's frustrating to see the Sharks treat the AHL system as, well, we are going to acquire all these picks, but we're only going to try and produce two players from the AHL because really we just need a couple of guys. You should be trying to develop everybody. You got to develop the winning culture. I know I say this all the time, but the San Francisco Giants, where did they get the players from to win their World Series in 2010, 2012, and 2014? Those players were San Jose Giants in 2007, championship-winning team. 2009, championship-winning team. 2010, championship-winning team. I feel like 2011, they went to the championship and lost. So, I mean, you've got this pedigree of winning that moves its way up through the organization. And for the Sharks to, I mean, we're going real old here, but get the Chad Costellos of the world to be their top players in the AHL, Lynn Loines and Jack Combs. And I know you guys might know Lynn Loines. I doubt anyone in the chat has heard of the other two guys I just mentioned, but like that's where Jordy Bellerive scored a goal tonight. You think Jordy Bellerive should be, you know, a middle six forward on the Barracuda right now? Like, bring in some leaders who are going to teach the prospects to elevate their game. We're not seeing that out of this organization year after year after year, except for the one time where they actually focused in on that, went to the Western Conference Finals. And we never seen that again.
And I think like this year too, and I think it's important, like, you know, and I've said this and Kevin has said this a lot, like this year has been a rough year for the Barracuda too, because like some of the guys they did bring in, like they brought in some good players this year that ended up just being on the Sharks all year. Ryan Carpenter,
yeah, true.
Justin Bailey, like these guys would help this team. I don't know if they would be a playoff team with those two guys on the roster, but
that's
they'd be better.
A good call. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. I don't think they've like completely forsaken the AHL team, but you know, but again, like you go back to the goaltending, right? Like Magnus Cronus starting in the NHL, he shouldn't be anywhere near the NHL.
Oh, something just caught my eye.
Go ahead.
I said, yeah, we're never going to see A2 Mäkiniemi. He's backing up tonight.
I am happy that he is back. I'm happy he has gotten over his mono.
Georgi Romano's got 28 saves though right now here in his start against Texas. Anyway, but look at, I mentioned Ryan Merkley. Look at Brandon Coe. People were so elated about, oh man, he could be a steal as a fourth round pick. Everything. Mm-hmm. He's barely been a fourth line player on the AHL. And why is that? Like the Sharks need to look organizationally and go, why are the players who were supposed to be NHLers someday not coming close to that?
Our development has been a real problem, and I think you kind of see that with where the Sharks are as a franchise. I don't know, we used to churn out a lot more talent, I feel like, back in the day. And what you guys were saying also, the winning culture, I think winning and losing are both extremely contagious. Right, like you cannot just expect someone who's a part of like seven straight years of losing to suddenly win. Like they may get thrown into a place that has a winning culture and adapt, but that stuff is ingrained in a person, you know, like you just become accustomed to something like this. And that's where it all kind of circles back to Eklund, Bortolo, and these guys. It's like, I just very much worry about their development and also what this is doing to them years down the line.
Jerk had an interesting question in the chat, and then I think we'll get into some broad brush final thoughts on Mike Greer and just how we feel about the team. But first thing, get to Jerk's question here. Jerk, anyone surprised that Sasha Chmielewski didn't get traded today, being as like there's talk of him possibly being moved. I know he's doing really well in the K. I don't think the K is as good as it used to be because of politics and stuff that we're not going to get into. But he's done really well over there, and I was kind of shocked when his name got kind of bandied about earlier in the season. I'm like, why wouldn't the Sharks want to bring that guy back? But you know, maybe he just doesn't want to be here, and that's fine. I'd look at this team and I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to be here either. Are you guys surprised that Chmielewski didn't get moved today for maybe like a low pick or something? Not a low, like a, you know what I mean by low pick, late round pick.
No, I'm not surprised. I don't know about you, Casey.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I think he should, if he has expressed no desire in returning, I think the Sharks should try and pick up something for him. But this situation does happen from time to time. I think of Carl Soderberg, for example. He was signed, drafted by St. Louis, I think, and then waited it out until he became an unrestricted free agent, basically, and then signed with Boston and became a very prominent NHLer. And we do see that happen. And unfortunately, I think Sasha Chmielewski, if he does get traded, I would expect it to be at the draft or on July, whatever the start of free agent frenzy is at this point. Is it July 5th now?
Yeah.
So Kevin Way says he isn't an NHL player. I disagree.
He might. I mean, who knows? Like, but teams take flyers on players like that all the time.
Exactly.
I actually thought he looked decent in his last stint with the Sharks.
Yeah.
He had that was one of the reasons why I was surprised we didn't keep him, because I thought he actually had a chance of being on our roster full time the following season. Right. I would very much think he could be an NHL player.
Right. I mean, but it's one of those guys that the NHL takes, you know, like NHL teams take a flyer on all the time. Yeah. I think the question that I would like to end with, and it's very broad brush. How are we feeling overall about the San Jose Sharks, about Mike Greer, about the direction right now? And maybe how has today changed that for you? Who wants to go first?
Lacey, how about you go first? I've always been going first.
This is tremendously hard to swallow. I was, while you guys were talking earlier, like early on, when was the last time I felt like this about a Sharks, you know, a prominent Shark being traded? And I'm not counting Joe Pavelski because he left via free agency. But that was the last time I felt this bad as a Sharks fan was when Pavelski left. But in terms of a trade, I was thinking, man, like Jeff Friesen. But the thing of it is Jeff Friesen, we got Timo Solani for him. So it was like, man, that sucks. But, right?
But.
Owen Nolan was like, oh, my God, that's my favorite player. Owen Nolan's my favorite. But we kind of thought Owen Nolan was going to get traded. I did not see Tomas Hertl come. You know who's gleeful about that? James Duffy. James Duffy's like, all right, we got something for trade center. This is hard. This one's hard. I mean, he's the spirit of the team. He's not just the best player. He's the spirit of the team, and he's gone now. And the only other player that you could say would be the spirit of the team, I feel like, would be Logan Couture, and we already talked about that. So, I mean, right now it's like Fabian Zetterlund, pack on the Rockets, because the Sharks fan base is going to need something. And how, from the last two games where the Sharks only drew, 6,000 fans or whatever it was? I know on Pucknologists, they had their running bet about, will the Sharks have their first game under 10,000? Well, boy, did we shoot below that the last couple of games. And how is this supposed to... When the team goes scorched earth, it's not supposed to be scorched earth that is like napalm through the seats. Like, I know there's all those glowing lights in the seats now. We shouldn't be seeing more and more of those. And I don't see how the trade that was made today changes that for a long, long time.
Yeah. I think it's just a very difficult time, and it just continues to be so. And the last time the Sharks were this bad, I was a child, so I didn't comprehend quite how bad shit really was. And I know, Ian, you were saying this is like the most removed you felt from the team for the rest of the season. I felt that way like pretty much this entire season. Like, I watch games very casually here. I'd never expect anything good to come out of it. I'm watching it because I love hockey and I like the Sharks, but there's just no emotional involvement with the team at the moment. Like, the most exciting day of the year is the draft, like, or the draft lottery. And it's like, it's just a sad state to be in. But on the Greer front, like, I do feel like he's making some of the right moves. I think it's like I said earlier, it's just like, I always have something about his trades that I question. And I just never felt that way with Doug Wilson. I know we obviously had it good with some of those trades. Doug Wilson signings, whole different ballgame, right? But his trades, I feel like I never was like, oh, that, what is with this stupid little detail in here?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, it's just Greer. It's just constantly, no matter what trade it is, I'm just like, there's always something about it where I'm just like, something rubs me the wrong way. And it's just like, I don't know if it's like new GM syndrome. I don't know if it's buddy helping out this franchise so they help you out later. Who knows what goes on in those back rooms with the GMs, but it's just like something about it just feels wrong at times. It's like, I never feel like the Sharks are getting that extra little piece where maybe it should be a third rounder or a second rounder. Whereas like when we trade for like Luke Cunningham, it's like, wait, we threw in a third rounder for this guy who might've been bought out. It's like, these are the little things that just add up and add up. And it's like, that's why I have a hard time ever saying I'm going to give Greer like a good grade, because it's like, while I see his vision at this point in terms of building draft capital, rebuilding, and trying to get as many first-round picks and prospects and blah, 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 he has turned our prospect pool into one of the tops in the league now, right? I still just want more. I want more. I want to feel like our GM is actually, like, valuing things properly and, like, we're not just helping other teams out all the time, because that's constantly what our trades feel like. It's like, we're helping this franchise. We're helping this franchise. Just say no once, or like get that extra piece that makes it look like, okay, the Sharks actually won this deal.
Yeah, hang on, Ian. Yep. Mark, totally, because we saw, I think Mike Greer's heart is in the right place. Yep. Like, I think he's really trying to turn it around, and I think he's, you know, he's got his hand on the pulse, his finger on the pulse. You look at, there was a photo that surfaced on Twitter. He looked tired. He looked upset. It looked like he'd kind of been crying a little bit, to be honest. So, but is he evaluating players in the right way? Does he have the personnel around him to help him evaluate players? The very first trade he made, was that the Luke Cunningham trade, or was there a trade before that?
I think it was the I forget if that was Burns was, or was it the first rounder trading down? I don't remember the order which those happened, but those were the first three trades.
In that ballpark, though, he had just been named GM. Mm-hmm. And it was like, did he even have time to fairly evaluate his roster? And did the people around him give him good information? Because right out of the gate, people were questioning it. And again, you got to give him the opportunity to blow it up and build it in his own image. But now here we are. It looks like we're rebuilding the rebuild.
We're not rebuilding the rebuild. The rebuild just started.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah.
I felt that had to
Mark,
be
did you have anything? I'm done.
No, I mean, pretty much at this point, it's just, I wonder when the Sharks will be competitive again. And I'm thinking maybe 2026, 2027. I just don't know. Like, I think it's really up to the lottery at this point. If we can get a first this year and maybe a first next year, maybe that speeds things up. I don't know. But it's just like, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel, because even our prospects that are developing, I just don't feel like any of it is really game changers. And we just seem to constantly be missing out by just that much. It's like you were saying last year about us being in the fourth pick last year. Now, I love Will Smith, don't get me wrong, but we missed out on what were more sure things and guys you literally build a franchise around. Whereas Will Smith, I feel like he's going to be like that second line center, not maybe that first line center. And it's like, if we finish with the second pick again this year, we just miss out on Celebrini. And it's just like, when does that end for us? I don't know. It's just, it's tough to keep seeing that.
So I have been, I think, for the most part, I think people that watch the show will agree that I have been a very much a trust the process guy. I've been pretty much like, this is what we have to do. There's going to be some pain here. And then, so obviously, and then today happens, right? And today is the first time I've really started to question what the direction is, and I have concerns, and I think I've very well laid out those concerns over the course of the show, so I'm not going to double back on that. This summer, I think, will be a big determining factor on where I sit on Mike Greer, because if we go through the summer and the Barracuda are left in the same hands that they are currently in, well, then, then Mike Greer is going to be super off the Christmas card list. I can't, that's my concern. I just, there's too many, I'm starting to see too many red flags now with this thing. I don't think today was a complete disaster. I think overall, outside of the, everything they did was fine for the most part, other than the hurdle thing. And obviously the hurdle thing hurts, and I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't, and that's not influencing my decision, my opinion on this greater than maybe it should be. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we tried to come on here with a sober, kind of time to reflect on things and kind of collect our thoughts and do this show. And I'm not going to pretend I'm not emotional about this. Clearly I'm very emotional about this. But at the same time, I just feel there's a lot of red flags starting to pop up, you guys have said, there's the details in the trades. Why are we just sending all these extra picks for what, things like that. The fact that the Barracuda have been allowed to be the tire fire that they are. If we have the same coaching staff next year, I don't think that I can bring myself to cover the Barracuda again next year, because I'll still watch them, but I doubt I'll make content about them, because I don't know why I would put myself through that again. This is the most disconnected. I would never stop being a fan. It would take something monumental for me to not be a fan of the San Jose Sharks. That would have to be the San Jose Sharks become the Houston Cactuses. That's probably where I'd jump off, right? I'm not saying I'm gonna jump off the team. I don't think I ever could. I've cheered for this team since I was 11 years old, when they came into the league, but I've never been so down on the direction. We knew the rebuild was a necessary thing. We knew the team had to rebuild. It's something that all teams eventually have to go through. We knew it was coming, but I have questions. And I don't want to completely go over and hash points. You can go back to through the 90 minutes of show that we've done, and you can, you can hear all my thoughts again. But I don't know. I have questions about the directions. I have questions about Mike Greer at this point. And I'm slowly turning against Mike Greer, I think, at this point. I'm really worried that we're going to be in a situation that we're going to rebuild our rebuild in 3 years. And in 3 years is going to become 6 years, is going to become 10 years. And, because we've seen other teams do that. I have concerns. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope that is just me being incredibly emotional on a shitty day. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm really souring on Mike Greer.
Well said.
Yep. Well said.
Well, I guess we have one. We have one good thing to close out the show, and we can't even have it be as good as it should be. So the Barracuda have won. The Texas Stars scored with 13 seconds left, so Georgi Romanov did not get a shutout, but he did make 42 saves in a win in Cedar Park. So Barracuda 2, Texas Stars 1. Wish it was 0. At least we got something to finish the day, guys. But this one's a tough one to swallow, and I think you're dead on that this is the low point.
They can't get any lower than this. I don't think. I mean, maybe my grossly hold my beer. I hope not. All right, let's get out of here. If you have missed this or you want to watch it again, you can watch this, obviously, on our YouTube channel. You can get the audio anywhere you get your podcast. You can always find everything we do on TealTownUSA.com. We appreciate everyone who joined us. We appreciate everyone who was in the chat. I wish that we could have gotten to more stuff in the chat, but I think we'd be here all night, and I wanted to do a more concise show, and not a show that ended up being as long as our live stream. So I hope you guys enjoyed the content. We will be doing this for the rest of the year, obviously. So stay tuned for that. Pucknologist Sunday, after dark. I think the Sharks play tomorrow, so there's an after dark then. Any final thoughts, guys? Anything you want to say before we say goodbye?
I will say that because the chat brought it up, and we'll leave it as a teaser, because I'm sure there's going to be a Pucknologist on Sunday where they would love to discuss Alexander Barabanov still being with the Sharks, despite the reports that he will be traded. He was told he would be traded. He was not traded. I want to know how, hopefully between now and Sunday, we find out what went wrong there. So I'm at Kevin Lacy 22 on Twitter. I think I need to be off Twitter the rest of the night, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I'm gonna go get a drink, to be quite honest, guys. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, it's definitely that kind of day. A couple of Molsons will go down very nicely after this podcast. Marky Mark SJS on Twitter. Definitely been scrolling through there way too much. My phone battery is pretty much dead. And as you guys have all echoed, tough pill to swallow today. I really don't have too much more than that.
Apparently Musty had 7 points tonight.
Good job. All right, guys.
The OHL. There we go.
You can find him at Mark Emark SGS on Twitter. You can find me at Ian Blogs Hockey on Twitter. And with that, I bid you adieu. Thanks for watching. Good night.